you can plan, it's now his skills fail. And if we find an opportunity, I'm going to request that we also look at the ATP of Lusaka. If we find an opportunity. I know that I didn't alert you in advance, that's why I'm raising it now. I'll give you 5 minutes to, if you find an opportunity to, for you to go and collect your documentation. But for now, the main business of the day is the bill. I've also requested that, as colleagues will be aware, that there are sittings of the EPCs that will be allowed to continue with the meeting. Permission has been tentatively granted, not formally, but we are continuing with the meeting. We hope that because Parliament has resolved that those that have got legislation in front of them should actually find the way of concluding the legislation timely, we are hoping that we'll do exactly that. We know that we only received our bill last week, and they were already on course, and we hope to make sure that we conclude all the procedures and processes in time and have the bill enacted before the next parliament. And that accounts for the welcome to all of ourselves. Minister, welcome. We have apologies for Sisuke Tabate. She is not well. I've received a medical certificate in that regard, but also a apology from member
Mapule
Mafolo. She's part of the EPC on energy that's taking place now at 10 o'clock.
In mineral.
Yeah, whatever.
What if?
Yeah, that thing. Mineral or energy. It's almost one of the things. Both of them have got energy. Most of it comes from underground. yeah, so are we done, Najira? Is there any other housekeeping measure? Is there anyone who needs to be acknowledged? You want a PowerPoint? It's here, this thing of overhead. Is there anybody who needs acknowledgement and recognition? Minister?
Morning, Shepherd and members. The Deputy Minister is still coming, unless they enjoy it, despite of slight delay.
Okay. Yeah. The DM will join us. Actually, they did say it to me. Yeah, just that it's my fault. Yeah, everybody knows everyone.
No.
You want to introduce yourself? There is the mic. And that gentleman said they are singing for the first time. You go to a mic and introduce yourself. The rest are members of parliament here. This side and this side is the minister and his contingent. Madam, you first on the floor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to everybody. Kumele Lengema, parliamentary legal advisor.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was complaining that we don't have a legal advisor. So, we want a permanent one, but it's fine. Sir.
Good morning, everyone. My name is James.
I don't know, but the legal advice.
But that off.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you.
Mina Ashitiva, Parliamentary Monetary Group, PMG.
PMG. Okay.
Love your work.
Who loves the work?
I do. PMG. I think they do a great job.
They very do, well. Actually. They do.
Brilliant.
Very well.
To be honest.
So please ask them to raise the salaries at TMG. Said, do we have we ever come across it? Okay.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Pongani of the Department of Telecommunications.
Even myself, I don't hear you.
Okay, he is voiceless.
He's going to write it down.
He's got a problem with the voice. So.
He was fine in one of our 11 official languages.
Yeah, well. Madam, do we know you?
My name is
Nosy
from the Department of
Telecommunications.
Oh, okay.
When I will know you.
Okay.
The rest is known. Madam, colleagues, I think everyone has
Bongani Ngobo
Midala Services of the Department.
I hope he's not resenting you.
Oh no.
If I also fall a bit asleep, just understand I've taken some tablets to stay away from sickness. So members must understand I'm taking some flu tablets. So if I slumber, don't take a picture of me and say, look at the chairperson, he sleeps in the meeting. And therefore, we are moving without a motion, without notice, for him to be recalled.
Remove you.
Colleagues, thank you. Let's kick off with our meeting, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a few points. This bill, I think, is coming to the, for the second time the committee after original consultation on the objectives of the bill and part of our legislative process. In short, Chairperson, the details will be put in the presentation. We are basically strengthening the MESA, the training institution, by bringing a component which was developed for responsible for e-skills in the department itself, together with the Center for e-skills Institute for Space and Software Application, which is based in Cape Town. So we are consolidating this to create a more powerful institution to deal with the skills which are required for the future. We have consulted widely. Firstly, I'm happy higher education is here because they are responsible really for training. So this is a specialized institution which collaborates with the higher education institution. And we really hope and we're engaging with the minister. We used to engage with Minister on demand. Minister Mkhize seems to be Minister, which was Chief Minister, and now with Minister Pando, to really expand this thing so that the MESA becomes just a coordinator for this e-skill or the e-skills institute in the country. They are using basically a simple model of partnership because there's no way one institution can deliver this mammoth task. They are building on the current COLEF framework where they partner with university and other centers of higher education. And basically looking at skills for the future, as we all know that with this digital revolution will require a lot of new soft skills and hard skills in this field. The accounting authority will be the board, and the bill will deal with procedures how we appoint, dissolve, and the board as an accounting authority. And it will be managed by the, its management led by the CEO and other senior officials such as CFO, and we'll deal with the appointment of those. the funding approach is slightly different from the current funding model. Of course, most of funding will come from fiscal through appropriation of parliament, but we're also looking at some these companies should invest. Some of the funds will come from investment, but as we also looking for donations, the people who have got money can donate to this food cause, including the fund from this digital development fund we should form, or what is called universal access currently. So that is the bill in short, and we felt we should institutionalize this new E-Skills Institute, because it was launched and then we found that we are having problems, because you must have a funding model for this for the institution. But the emphasis is that we are not creating a totally new institution. We are building on the current capability so that we massify E-Skills production. Thank you very much. Chairperson, may I introduce us? I think it's known a bit. He's one of the drafters working with the gentleman who's got no voice of the bill. We tend to draft our own legislation using internal capacity. We've got the chairperson of the board of NEMISA with us, Director General, I'm sure she'll delegate to the DDG responsible for SOE oversight, Ubabu Shaden. With your permission, chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Any takers on what the Minister has said? No. DG and the company. Shalembe, you are appropriately assigned.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to honorable members, Minister and colleagues. Chair, we have had at least two encounters with the committee here last year, where we were updating the committee on the progress with respect to the establishment of INE. The last time we were here, we committed that the bill will be approved by cabinet in March, and indeed the bill was approved on the 14th of March, and was then sent to state law advisors for final certification and subsequent tabling in parliament. So we were just going to take the committee through the bill itself. But before going through the actual provisions of the bill, we thought we'll just recap again, you know, the actual model of INE-SE as we have tried to capture it in the bill. We have made these presentations, as I said, in the past, so I'll just go a little bit quicker on those background slides and then perhaps take a little bit more time on the actual provisions of the bill. So the next slide, number two, just shows then the outline of the presentation. So the first five slides really talk to the background that I'm referring to about the model that we are trying to put together. And then the rest is the actual provisions of the bill. As part of the background, this dates back now to the introduction of the concept, which included by mid-2015 an update to the portfolio committee on the concept. Again, in March and November 2017, we provided progress report, and ultimately then we had the bill approved by cabinet in March 2018. The business case which supports this legislation was developed in the 2015-16 financial years and has been refined until we have started finalizing the legislation. As part of the business cases compilation, we had to consult key departments, particularly the Department of National Treasury, as well as the Department of Public Service and Administration, and also the Department of Higher Education and Training, as the Minister has highlighted the closeness and the working relationship we have with the DHET. In 2016, again, we released STTPS, the National ICT Integrated Policy White Paper. It also reiterates the need to implement the establishment of INES. And like I said, on 14 March, Cabinet approved the bill to be introduced to Parliament. As part of the background, we refer to the NDP 2030, which calls for improving equitable access to enhance ICT services, saying that requires actions to stimulate demand by particularly improving illiteracy through basic and secondary schooling, tertiary adult education, and supplier training to support the production of multilingual, relevant, and local content for public programming and information services, whether these are in education or entertainment, and develop online and mobile service and application. The NDP also says this will create demand for ICT services as content and applications become increasingly relevant to the needs and interests of the wider community. It also says for the sector to grow, it will require a significant number of different skilled people to fill the range of specialized job opportunities created, and therefore the education system will need to prepare for this. Like I said, the ICT White Paper of 2016 also recognized the need for a new skills dispensation to drive heightened innovation in the ICT sector. The next slide presents what we call the framework for the development of e-skills or digital skills. It covers the entire spectrum of skills development, starting with a base of illiteracy, which we have there as the number one, and is supported or also continues to include what we call sector user e-skills.
But there's also a buzzer somewhere.
I don't know.
Should we look for it?
It could be attended to. But could you know?
Thank you, Chair.
God, that was quick.
Just close the door. So, Chair, the framework includes, as I say, one e-literacy, which is the basic e-skilling, coming up to sector user e-skills, to ICT practitioner skills, to the highest level of skilling at e-leadership skills. We also include, as part of the framework, necessary competencies for SMMEs, both in the ICT and non-ICT sector, to grow and develop their enterprises through technology enablement for enhanced sustainability and potential job creation through localization and local content development. So as part of INES, we're saying INES is essentially, as the Minister has indicated, an integration of three e-skills development related components of the CDS,
name in the public entity International Electronic Media Institute of South Africa, the MISA, the eSkills Institute, which is functioning in the GTPS, and the Institute for Space and Software Applications, ESA, which is also part of the GTPS. We say the purpose of NAC is to act as a catalyst for new e-skills in South Africa, working in partnership with other role players within and outside of government to drive the aspirations, as I have quoted, in the NDP, SA Connect, and the ICT white paper for social appropriation of ICT for local benefit and the meaningful use and operational capability at the consumer level. The next slide then presents what we call the INES model. It's a slightly busy slide, but it can be summarized as follows. On the left-hand side of the slide are arrows, three pointing down and two pointing up. The downward arrows indicate the functions that will be performed by INES itself, essentially giving strategic guidance on e-skills development. It will also provide funding and ultimately perform the monitoring and evaluation function. The actual training will be performed by the higher education and training institutions, which are universities, TVET colleges, private colleges, and so on. They will also perform research as indicated by the arrows going up, and that research then will form part of the input that INES will utilize in developing the strategic direction of the e-skills development program. Next to that then are the actual functions of INES, which are in the green. These are basically to promote and guide the development of digital and multimedia skills, identify digital and multimedia skills supply and demand, ensuring that digital and multimedia skills demand are met, the advocacy function, support initiatives which promote knowledge and use of ICTs, the establishment of an e-skills research network, and the monitoring and evaluation function. On the extreme right, then, are the general stakeholders of this institute, which include government, business and industry, civil society, international organizations, and so on. On the next slide, we then present the CoLab network. 7 CoLabs have already been established across 7 provinces, and the 8th CoLab is being established currently in Gauteng. The only outstanding province where a CoLab has not been established is the Free State at the moment, and discussions are underway to have that established as well. Each CoLab has what we call its own thematic or focus area, and they are captured there in the slide. I'll just quickly go through them. I'll start with Western Cape. We'll have its thematic area being e-inclusion and social innovation. And the Limpopo will deal with connected health. Northwest is agrotourism. KZN CoLab deals with enablement of effective service delivery. Eastern Cape deals with ICT for rural development. Northern Cape deals with knowledge-based economy and e-social astuteness. Mpumalanga deals with future digital integration and cybersecurity. And the new CoLab that is being established in Gauteng deals with creative new media, the broadcasting-related CoLab. the idea really, I think the prof, if you can get the opportunity, can talk in detail here, but the idea is, whilst each collab has its thematic area, that the work and the training programs developed at each collab may be utilized by other collabs as well to ensure the dispersion of all these programs throughout the country using electronic platforms. Then the next slide just shows the departments that we've had to consult. I've mentioned these three departments. We consulted Treasury to deal with issues relating to funding and the consolidation of e-skills components of the department, and the Minister of Finance gave his concurrence on the business case. The Department of Public Service and Administration, focusing mainly on the transfer of functions and concomitant resources from the department to the new institution, again, the concurrence on the business case was given at the ministerial level. We also consulted the Department of Higher Education and Training, basically to align two acts relating to teaching and training, to explore co-funding possibilities, looking particularly at the skills development funding in the department, and also to clarify the respective roles and responsibilities in connection with teaching and training. The two DGs, our DG and the DG of Higher Education and Training, entered into a memorandum of agreement which concretized the concurrence for the business case. Now I go to the actual provisions of the bill. Perhaps what we should have included, which is not here, is to talk briefly about the definitions and sections. Included in the bill, I just need to indicate at least two aspects relating to definitions. The first one relates to what the terms we are using almost interchangeably throughout our documentation. That is the digital skills and e-skills. Those two terms find themselves used interchangeably, particularly in the business case. But in the legislation, we have then tried to commit ourselves to using one term throughout and are using digital skills, but in essence, they mean the same thing. Digital skills, we say, means the ability to use and develop ICTs within the context of an emerging South African information society and global knowledge economy and associated competencies that enable individuals to actively participate in a world which ICT is a requirement for advancement in government, business, and education. That is the definition we've included there for digital skills, which is the same definition we used in the business case for e-skills, and we've been using those terms interchangeably. The next, perhaps, definition that I need to talk to is we have introduced as well the term or concept multimedia. This was informed largely by our interactions with the National Association of Broadcasters. NEMISA, when it was formed, was exclusively dedicated to deal with the training in the broadcasting subsector. So they were worried that if we just use digital skills as encoding or encompassing the mandate of the new institute, we may start to somewhat defocus and perhaps even move away from broadcasting. So we were trying to reassure them that broadcasting remains an integral component of the digital skills training, but I guess then we reached each other in the sense that we could use a multimedia as part of reinforcing that a part of the mandate of the new institute to still continue providing broadcasting-related skills. to further dispel any notion that we are moving away from multimedia. As I've indicated, the Gauteng Collab that is being formed will essentially and especially focus on broadcasting skills. We call them new media or creative media skills. That collab will essentially then perform the kind of work that NEMISA has been performing and more, relating particularly to the broadcasting subsector. Then if I move on then, Chair, to the actual provisions of the bill, Section 2 of the bill deals with the establishment of INESI. It says INESI is being established as a juristic person. It integrates the functions of NEMISA, ESI, and ESA, as well as that it is governed by the PFMA and is to be listed as a public entity. Then we move on to Section 3 of the bill. This talks about the objects of INESI. It says INESI is established, one, to act as a national catalytic collaborator and a change agent for digital skills and multimedia development and organizational capacity in the country towards systematic change across all sectors for inclusion and competitiveness in the digital economy. It also says another object of INESI is to collaborate with relevant post-school education and training institutions offering digital skills and multimedia programs to maximize the use of existing infrastructure and resources and to work towards a proactive response to the digital skills and multimedia and capacity demands required within the digital economy. The next object is to encourage and promote an innovative research network focusing again on digital skills and multimedia with links to public and private university networks locally and internationally. Then the section 4 of the bill deals with the actual functions of INESI, which include the promotion and guidance to the development of digital skills and multimedia in the country, the identification of digital skills, multimedia demands and supply needs in collaboration with all the stakeholders, the regularly monitoring and giving advice to government, informing policy and advice to business and relevant bodies on digital and multimedia literacy levels, also to work with the stakeholders responding to the demands and the ICT to ensure that education and training institutions actually respond to the demands and of the ICT in the country, and generally raise awareness and promote meaningful and responsible use of and knowledge of ICTs. Also, it must support initiatives that promote the increased use and knowledge of ICTs, collaborating with all stakeholders to avoid duplication, fill gaps, and maximize the use of resources. Also perform and facilitate research and innovative networks and monitor and evaluate the development and level of digital skills capabilities in the country. It also has to perform its functions that I've just mentioned above in order to ensure that it achieves its objectives. It will also promote the digital skills framework and training and development model. It will also collaborate with stakeholders to enhance employment and enterprise development opportunities of digital skills and multimedia trainees, and promote digital skills and multimedia teaching, learning, research, innovation, monitoring and evaluation of ICT information skills and knowledge. again, as part of the function captured in Section 4, we say it must comply with the relevant higher education and training legislation. We talk here of the NQF legislation, the Higher Education Act, the Continued Education and Training Act, and the Skills Development Act, supporting such education and training or steering education and training to be provided or conducted. And it will also interact and foster collaboration with the ministry responsible for higher education and training. Then on Section 5, we talk about the actual collapse collaboration. We say the INES must consult post-school education and training institutions to establish collabs, and it must enter into agreements with these post-school education and training institutions, production and coordination collabs, and must agree on appropriate terms and conditions for collaboration with each one of these institutions. The collabs themselves are required to be accessible to all stakeholders to provide feedback to INES to assist in the developing the digital skills and multimedia policy, to promote and undertake research and innovation, provide research capacity to postgraduate students, initiate and implement projects, and establish the ICT networks across the spectrum of post-school education and training institutions, government organizations, other government organizations, civil society, and the business sector. Again, part of the collab's responsibility is that subject to the NQF Act, the collabs may, in collaboration with the appropriate quality council and SAQA, develop accredited short courses, including but not limited to courses about internet, cybersecurity, online safety programs, and usage of ICTs, in order to address gaps in the knowledge base of citizens, and in particular the target groups. Then we go on to Section 6, which deals with now matters pertaining to corporate governance. This relates to the actual appointment of the board. Some of the provisions there say the minister, before appointing the members of the board, must publish a notice in the Gazette and at least one national newspaper calling upon members of the public to nominate persons contemplated herein, and then appoint an independent panel which must compile a short list of not more than 20 persons from the nominees. Then it also continues to say if the minister receives no nominations or an insufficient number of nominations within the period specified in the notice, the minister may, after consultation with the panel, either re-advertise or in any other transparent manner appoint the required number of qualified persons to serve on the board. The members of the board contemplated are appointed by the minister on the grounds of their knowledge and experience covering areas like ICT academia, research, ICT innovation, ICT management, law, digital skills and multimedia, intellectual property and commercialization thereof, and business skills, which will then, when considered collectively, should enable them to achieve the object of INES. Where, upon invoking the processes that I've just outlined, candidates possessing the required expertise and socioeconomic profiles are not found, the minister may direct that an alternative process of procuring these skills be initiated. And then it goes on to say the board has fiduciary duties and must hold the executives accountable for the day-to-day management of the INES. Then Section 7 talks to the term of office of members of the UNESCO. It says members of the board must hold office for a period of 3 years and are eligible for reappointment on expiry of their term. But it also goes on to say a member may not serve for more than 2 terms, and that the minister may, after consultation with the board, extend the term of office of any or all members of the board for periods not more than 6 months or until a new board has been appointed, whichever comes first. Section 8 deals with a disqualification of board members and removal from office. These are the standard disqualifiers for board membership, which have to do with a mental incapacity. That is, a person who has been declared by a competent court to be mentally ill, or a convicted person of an offence and sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine, or in the case of fraud, to a fine or imprisonment. The elected members of the National Assembly or a provincial legislature, or the council of a municipality, or if that person is appointed as a delegate to the National Council of Provinces by a provincial legislature. It also disqualifies a person who is not a South African citizen or ceases to be a South African citizen. Also, a person who is removed from a position of trust by a competent court of law, and a person who is an unrehabilitated insolvent. Sections 9 and 10 of the bill, they deal with disclosure of interest and the remuneration of members of the board. It says under disclosure of interest, a member of the board must, upon appointment, disclose to the minister annually by way of a written statement any interest, including all financial interest, which could reasonably compromise the board in the performance of its function. And also, a member of the board may not vote or in any manner be present during or participate in the proceedings at any meeting of the board if, in relation to any matter before the board, that member may have an interest which precludes him or her from performing his or her functions as the member of the board in a fair, unbiased and proper manner. On remuneration of members of the board, it says members of the board shall receive such remuneration and allowances as the minister, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, may determine. Section 11 deals with the meetings of the board. It says the chairperson must preside at a meeting of the board. If the chairperson and the deputy chairperson are not present at the meeting of the board, the members of the board present at that meeting must elect from amongst themselves a member to preside at such a meeting. The board must meet at least 4 times a year at such time and place as the board may determine, and that the board may determine the procedure for its meetings. Meetings of the board continued. The chairperson may convene a special meeting of the board, and also the chairperson must, within 14 days of receipt of a written request signed by at least 2/3 of the members of the board, to convene a special meeting, also convene such a special meeting. The quorum for a meeting of the board is 2/3 of the members eligible to vote at that meeting. And the decision of the board is taken by a resolution of the majority of board members present at the meeting of the board, and in the event of an equality of vote, the presiding chairperson, or says the person presiding, which is the chairperson, at that meeting has a casting vote in addition to his or her deliberative vote. Section 12 deals with the dissolution of the board. It says the minister may dissolve the board if A, the board is unable to perform its duties in terms of this act or this bill currently, or on the grounds of mismanagement. And B, if there is a breakdown in the relationship amongst the members of the board which renders the continued effective functioning of the board impossible. The bill also provides that if the minister exercises his or her powers in terms of this section, the minister must comply with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act of 2000. It also provides that within 21 days of the dissolution of the board, the minister must appoint an interim board consisting of a minimum of 3 persons to assume the responsibilities of the board until a new board is constituted in accordance with the procedure as contemplated above. It provides also that the new board must then be constituted within 180 days of the dissolution of the previous board. It says any person who was a member of the board that was dissolved in terms of this section may be reappointed to a new board. The minister must, within 30 days of dissolution of the board, submit a report to the National Assembly stating out the reasons for the dissolution of the board. Section 13 deals with the key personnel, basically, but generally human resources matters. It first deals with the appointment of chief executive officer and chief financial officer. It says the board must, with the approval of the minister, appoint the chief executive officer and chief financial officer to ensure that INES meets its objectives. The board must invite applications for the post of CEO and CFO by publishing advertisements in the media. It then details the expectations of a CEO and of a CFO that they must have the qualifications or experience relevant to the functions of the INES, not to be disqualified as contemplated to the disqualifications I've listed relating to board members, must then receive such remuneration and allowances as the board with the concurrence of the minister may determine, and have such pension and other employment benefits as are consistent with those paid in the public sector. Termination of employment of CEO and CFO. It says the board must, with the approval of the minister and subject to compliance with the Labour Relations Act of 1995, terminate the employment of a chief executive officer or a chief financial officer for a misconduct which includes any act or failure to act as prescribed, or B, for failing to perform the duties connected with that office diligently. It also provides that the board may suspend the services of the CEO or CFO pending the finding of any misconduct proceedings against him or her, during which period the CEO or CFO is also suspended as an executive member of the board. The CEO or CFO must vacate the office if he or she becomes disqualified from membership of the board. Acting provisions relating to acting chief executive officer and chief financial officer are contained in section 15 of the bill, which reads, the board may in writing appoint any senior employee of INES to act as CEO or CFO when the holder of that office, A, is temporarily unable to perform the duties connected with that office, B, has been suspended from office, or C, has vacated or has been removed from that office, and the new CEO or CFO, as the case may be, has not yet been appointed. That section also says an acting CEO or CFO may exercise all the powers and must perform all the duties of the CEO or CFO, as the case may be. Then section 16 deals with the employees of INEPU. It says the CEO must, on such terms and conditions as the board may determine, appoint employees of INEPU or receive on secondment such persons as are necessary to enable INEPU to perform its function. Then INEPU must pay the employees such remuneration, allowances, subsidies and other benefits as are consistent with that paid in the public sector. The CEO is responsible for the administrative control, organization and discipline of the employees of INEPU and for ensuring compliance with applicable labor legislation. Relating to funding, the provisions are in section 17 of the bill. It says INEPU will be funded mostly from money appropriated by Parliament, other revenue including interest derived from its investment, and also donations and contributions. It also says, subject to this section, all income and property and all the proceeds of INEPU must be applied exclusively to the promotion of the objects of INEPU. And it says also, INEPU may, subject to the approval of the minister and in terms of the PFMA, invest any fund, any of its funds not immediately required. Section 18 deals with reporting. It starts with the CFO compiling an annual report at the end of a financial year, which captures or reports on the activities, advice, and recommendations to the board. The board must also report to the minister on the activities of INEPU when required to do so by minister. The financial management of INEPU and submission of financial statements and annual reports must comply with the provisions of the PFMA, and the minister must table such a report in Parliament. Section 19 and 20, they deal with issues relating to compliance with the Public Finance Management Act, as well as the regulations that the minister may make. Section 19 then says, INEPU is required to comply with the provisions of the PFMA applicable to national public entities. For the purpose of the Public Finance Management Act, the board is the accounting authority as contemplated in section 49(2)(a) of the PFMA. The minister is the executive authority as contemplated in section 52 of the PFMA, and that any delegation of the board's responsibilities in terms of the PFMA must be in accordance with section 56 of that act, which is the PFMA. On regulations, under section 20, we provide that the minister may make regulations with regard to any matter that may or must be prescribed in terms of this act, and any ancillary or incidental administrative or procedural matter that is necessary to prescribe for the proper implementation or administration of this act. Then I think moving towards the final provisions, Chair, they relate to transitional arrangements. As part of the transition, we provide that, or that section 21 provides that the functions and concomitant resources from NEMISA, ESI, and ESA will be transferred to INEPU immediately after the commencement of this act, and in accordance with the Labour Relations Act of 1995 and any other applicable collective bargaining agreement with organised labour. The remuneration and other terms and conditions of service of a person transferred in terms of the above provision may not be less favourable than the remuneration terms and conditions applicable to that person immediately before his or her transfer, and he or she remains entitled to all rights, benefits, including pension benefits and privileges to which he or she was entitled immediately before such transfer. It also provides that a person transferred to INESI in terms of the above mentioned remains subject to any decisions, proceedings, rulings, and directions applicable to that person immediately before his or her transfer, to the extent that they may remain applicable, and also that any proceedings against such person which were pending immediately before his or her transfer must be disposed of as if that person had not been transferred. Again, section 21 continues. It talks about that no change of employer must be regarded as having taken place when the above mentioned person takes up employment at the INESI, that is for the purposes of the Income Tax Act, and that a person who was appointed as CEO or CFO of NEMIS immediately prior to this Act coming into operation, that person is the CEO or CFO for a term expiring on the date that such appointment would have expired had this Act not come into operation. Any members of the NEMISA board who immediately prior to the commencement of this Act were members of the board must be deemed to have been appointed members of INESI board for the remainder of the period for which each member was appointed as a board member under NEMISA. Again, all policies, procedures, and processes governing NEMISA prior to the commencement of the Act are deemed to have been prescribed in terms of this Act and are binding on INESI until amended or substituted in terms of this Act. Chairperson, that is the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Colleagues, there's refreshments. DM, welcome. All of yourselves, feel free to pick up a cup of coffee or tea or whatever whilst we continue with our meeting. Madam Killian, Madam Shin, Mama Tsotipi, Madam and Sir. You're on the floor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation and for the bill. Obviously, we are currently just asking questions of clarification and perhaps reasoning why things were done in a particular manner. Can I just please ask the following? INESI, or the department, is making out a very solid case for the reason for e-skills and e-astuteness and its role in the very fast-changing technological and innovation world that we're facing, fourth industrial revolution, and et cetera, et cetera. Can I just ask, why is the institute pitched at post-school level? And why does it not fulfill, and why did it not engage with the Department of Basic Education? Because that is where the blocks, the sort of development should certainly, and the pillars should be positioned. Should we not determine what is being done through basic education so that this institute can build, and in cases where there's a severe inability to develop these skills at that level. So I'm just a little concerned, Chairperson, in your absence, that we are pitching at post-school, and there are many, many colleges, et cetera, where you can go to, but unless you have had exposure to e-skills at schools level, the gap that we find amongst the underskilled youth is exactly those people who have not had any exposure and who cannot help themselves. So that's my first question. Because I also see that there was no consultation with the Department of Basic Education. Then, secondly, flowing from that, if you would develop or through other institutions ensure the development of short courses, which should be supported in principle. But where would it be positioned on the national qualifications framework? And how would it be accredited? Would people get actual certificates? And will that be in line with NQF so that there could be movement, mobility, and you know, that you can gradually upskill your e-skills. So where would it be positioned? Have you given that any consideration? And then, Che, I would like to know, is it necessary for such a large board? We have some of the entities where the board meetings, etc., is really consuming quite a lot of the expenses. We understand that this would need particular skills, and it's wide ranging because it is both broadcasting as well as e-literacy skills and advanced qualifications. Just a question about that. Then I note here that procedures were put in place to identify how decision making is taking place in the board. Now, having had the terrible confusing arguments in the SABC board and what went wrong there, should it not be deliberately explained that executive committee members, executive board members, should not participate in decision making, so that there is a clear differentiation in the board of who is accounting to who. Now, a second element that is also very seriously imprinted is in the SABC inquiry is the whole debacle about accountability and a board that could go rogue, unfortunately, and where DCs are simply instituted because some of the board members dislike a CEO, not on account of any good reason. I think there are other entities that we face the same sort of situation. How does the responsibility of the CEO, how is it protected, the CEO's responsibility protected? Because clearly this is a public entity. This person should comply with provisions of the Public Service Act, National Treasury, PFMA, etc., etc., and you have a board which is maybe composed of people from the academia who don't always understand the public sector and public accountability measures. How do you clearly protect the CEO, not from wrongdoing, but from a board that could, in fact, push in a particular direction, such as, for instance, escalating salaries, etc., etc.? Should we not link that to specifics in the legislation? Just your thoughts on that, Chairperson, because if I look, for instance, at provisions of the Act, I think in some cases one would have to learn from very serious experiences that we've had. Just one last question. The functions of the INESI as an institution. The last one of monitoring and evaluating the development and level of digital skills and multimedia capabilities. How? How would that be done? And that brings me back to the issue of collaborating with basic education as well, because we should be able to test the outcomes of the education sector as a whole, not only post-school, but in school, because many of these young learners leave school and don't go to post-school institutions, and that is where the real gap is. So I just have a serious concern there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The presentation makes no mention of public participation. Did you ask for public comment? Did you get any public comment? How many people responded to you? Did you take any of the advice from any of these people who may or may not have commented on the bill once it was initially published? Can we get a copy of the refined business case, please, for this bill? Was any impact assessment done? You make no mention of the impact that you expected to have on the sector and perhaps on the larger economy. Is there going to be any funding at all from the Department of Higher Education? Are they contributing at all, or are they just, you know, funding the institutions where the training takes place? I share the concern of the size of the board. We have an entity reporting to us that has a board bigger than the staff complement, and obviously, it's become to me a vehicle for milking it. And so I think we need to guard against unnecessarily sized boards. When it comes to selecting people for the board, the minister forms a panel to interview people and decide. How is that panel going to be comprised? Then just one of the definitions bothered me, and that was the one on multimedia. You don't make any mention, you say every type of information can be represented. Surely we could include in that can be created. I've just seen that this is a creative industry that needs to be some mention of creation there. Also clarity on the collab to come in the Free State. What is going to be their specific focus? Also again, on the, and let me get back to there. The collab, you say, must be accessible to all stakeholders. Can you just give clarity on who those stakeholders are? I assume it's the training institutes, but if you could please just define who stakeholders in the collabs are, and whether students are included as stakeholders. The Minister may, regarding the appointment of the board of NSE, if appropriate people or candidates aren't found, the Minister may direct an alternative process of procuring these skills. Can we please expand on what that process would likely to be? Another thing I would like to see in the disqualification of board members is that they should not be full-time employees of any government department. As far as I'm concerned, public servants get paid to do the job, and they shouldn't be doing extracurricular activities for a fee, unless it's community social work for no fee. I think those are the main ones that I want. Thank you.
On the slide, the collab network, can I get clarity on Gauteng and Northern Cape in terms of the collab? Under Gauteng it says TUT, I thought it would be VUT in Gauteng and VUT in Northern Cape. And on collab, collaboration, that's section 5, about the target groups, that to target unemployed people, that would be youth and maybe young adults. And again, there will be people who are employed but not having the skill, the required skill. How will this be a plan? Like maybe other people attending over weekends, because people who are employed may not have the opportunity to attend. During the the risk. And on section 6, on the potential board members, does the minister check if the potential board member sits in other boards and which positions they hold, you know, from other entities? You realize that there are people who are hardly, you know, attending meetings or not attending any requires. And it could be that someone's hands are too full, people belonging to many boards. And on section 11, are there any valid reasons that may require or necessitate the board to sit more than the estimated sort of seating? Because we have other board members who will be sitting, you know, far more than the required time, like, as you say, quarterly or maybe four times in a year, but you find that in just one quarter, people have held more than five meetings. And section 17, on the funding, the donations, what would be the conditions for donations? Because usually people who donate may put you know, conditions which are, you know, unpleasant to government and the beneficiaries, that there may be, you know, that backflow that we have to follow the conditions which will be set by those who are donating or funding. What will be the conditions that will really give us pleasure? And the word may, you know, we are lay people in the field of law. May it not, when we say may, won't it have some implications that, you know, whoever is supposed to implement certain decisions may be held back by the term to may? May and must, I'm not sure in legal terms if it really has the power, the way to may. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Ngoya.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is on section 2. Is there any age limit to enter, or any, or which level you enter to the school? Secondly, on section 6, number of board members. I don't know how many. And there's nothing say how many board members, or maybe I'm wrong. Sorry if at all I'm wrong. And then on section 12, has the board have the right to fire the CEO or CFO without the approval of the minister? There's nothing say, or there is, I don't know. Okay, other one. Oh, where am I now? Okay, sorry. Just now it's a plea. If can a department help us, the committee, to go to the school for this one, it could be good. It's a plea. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I like this tape. Partly covered by my colleagues, especially relating to concern around the number of board members, not less than six. Can you tell us how you got to that number of six board members? Perhaps Professor Carson, this is for you. Why would you need six and not three, for example, as a minimum? Also under six, the clause 6.6 and 6.8, perhaps the law advisor can assist. Are those standard clauses in contracts, the terminology applied there? Then under 4D, and perhaps I'm, it's just a matter of semantics, where it says work with the relevant government departments, institutions, entities, organizations, and businesses to ensure that the education and training institutions respond to the demands and needs for digital skills and multimedia in the country. That clause in itself almost gives the INESI an oversight role of other education and training institutions, the way I'm reading that, and perhaps you can assist me, because I get that impression. So to ensure that the education and training institute responds to the demand. So INESI would then be able to have a look at all these other organizations and business, which is essentially the private sector, and monitor or evaluate them. That's how that clause reads to me, and perhaps you can provide some clarity on that. Then, sorry, just bear with me, please. Then on page 14 of the Bill 4 consultation, the second point from the bottom, you spelt universal service. An access agency, you spell service S-E-R-C-E. I might want to correct that. Then just, sorry, take you back on page 3, the definition of multimedia means the field concerned with a computer-controlled integration of text, graphics, etc. I'm just interested why you view why you use the term computer controlled, because that, I mean, that gives you the impression of a keyboard and a screen where you're working, but essentially you can create multimedia on your phone, which is technically not a computer, or an iPad or anything like that. So perhaps you could I would suggest leaving it out altogether and just say means the field concerned with the integration of text, graphics, phone, video image. That's me done, Chair. Thank you.
I was just consulting our legal, our institutional legal advisor here, whether she's wanted to ask anything, because this bill will be left with us after today when she doesn't have anything to ask. I only have one question. What is the cost of this bill? If that my question is clear, if not, we will ask.
Open ended.
One would assume that when you enact legislation, you should cost it.
What?
Does it have a cost? All right. Over to you, department. Colleagues, you must remember that this is now your responsibility from today. This was the clarity seeking questions, and from here, it is you who makes the law. It is you who effects what you believe this law should actually provide. It is you who can reduce the board from 50 to 1, or from any number, indeed, but it's fair that you get to hear what was the motivation. You want to fire the CEO, it's your responsibility to enact the legislation in such a way that it takes a particular form. You can rework it from page 0 to page whatever. It is in your hands. But for now, clarity. Minister, DM, and the company.
Okay.
after then give to DM later.
Okay. I think we may start with the last question, but the officials will respond. My recollection, when we first brought the bill, we brought the details in that business case of the funding requirement. After engagement with National Treasury, we have to tailor them down because of the available funding. Because it was based on training, facilitated training millions of people. But because of limitation of funding, we have to scale it down until we can get donation and other sources of funding. But the officials can deal with that. It was done, the costing. As well as the business case, any bill which goes to cabinet, that's a standard, it must be done. It was done by NEMISA in working with the department and approved. Then also the other thing, the impact of the bill is done by the monitoring department in presidency. They have to give the certificate that there is no negative impact in the economy and society. All those things were done, but I thought I should just give those preliminary things. That's also on the cross-cutting thing, which has been raised by some of the members. I think the first question, why are we not focusing at the basic level? But maybe the GM can add to that. But my understanding, the Department of Basic Education is refocusing its curriculum. We've been engaging them on these matters. If you are to become more relevant, you should start coding at preschool level. Chairperson, what I do sometimes when there is this chaos in Parliament, I just open my computer and learn coding, because they are online courses, very simple courses to do basic coding. I think that's what we have to encourage to society. If these members of this committee can just go on those online courses, they are simple, they are not complicated. You don't have to have advanced math to do it. You don't need any mathematics. So everyone can do it. The only thing, maybe that means that we should translate some into our languages so that we can have uptake. But that's an approach. But the key component is to have a post-school certificate so that when you are trained, you can do something with this training. It's mainly based on the current, my understanding, platform of e-learning on the main than going to sit at school the whole year. So it is using the internet and only go for special courses or blocks at the institution. In that way, we can have many people participating in the program, even those who are working. I think it builds on those a few things. On the boards in general, most of the department will deal with specific things. The cabinet has given preliminary guidelines on the appointment of board of state-owned entities. So that's what will guide us, how big a board, because it won't be one fits all. It depends on the specific functions, the impact in the economy and society of that board. But the key to this is good governance. Each board must have specific committees, and there are mandatory committees of the boards. So that's what will determine the minimum number of the board members, because if you have very low number of board members, then you won't be able to fulfill those compulsory board committees which are there in terms of our legislation.
Yes, the new guidelines which are being finalized by CAFNET, they put limits to the number of boards you should clock. The current working document, they say you may not belong to more than two boards of two state entities. We are trying to put a limit even to those in the private sector so that unless there is a specific motivation why you should serve in more than those boards. So that's what we'll be guiding on, which is guiding us as we put this proposal for the board. It also talks about the appointment of the board as a process. It talks about the appointment of three key officials. I see that one is not appearing in this bill. The CEO, the CFO, and the chief operations officer, who drives the operations, depending on the size. Those are sort of protected officials because they drive the management and operations of the entities. I thought I should just raise those things. And maybe allow the deputy minister, because he's responsible for this board in particular, or just general, and the officials would deal with the difficult question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to add to what the minister has spoken about, why not focus on the DBE level, the basic education level? We are not targeting in-school youth. We are reinforcing skilling for the out-of-school youth and the employed. The reason we're doing that is because we realize that there is regulations in this country that a youth of a particular age must go to class full-time. We are working with DBE, as Minister was explaining. That's why you see our program, the one of the school's connectivity, whereby even including the issue of the content, it becomes the responsibility of education. Ours is to say we can assist you with the equipment and the tools so that whatever content that you want to put as you see fit as a specialist in the education sector. We are also taking consideration of the fact that in South Africa, not everybody has a matric level. Therefore, we do offer courses that start at N2 level 3 to accommodate those that have dropped out of schools, but to make sure that they also part of the digital society, they're able to respond to the challenges that will be required by the digital economy that we are building. We have made sure that we work with the universities, as you see the college, the house at the university level, and therefore there can't be any conflict in terms of how we go about the work, because it is the VCs that we sit with. It is them that identify. The only thing that we had to make sure that we enforce is the fact that let it not be just a pure academic program where it has the criterion of the universities, because we were clear that we need to massify the program, as the minister has spoken about. We have partnered with lots of different sectors. We have trained through this college teachers on basic ICT skills. We have trained nurses. We have trained a number of people. Hence, you see also in the bill, we talk of something like we refer to as the customized training, the one that Honorable Mackenzie asked, if then you are saying you will make sure that you train sector-based, it's because we have realized that we have produced lots of graduates and lots of people who are qualified but who are unemployable because their skills do not respond to what the market requires. And as I said, we're not doing that as a department. We've got this group of all these VCs coming throughout the country. We sit down with other academic professionals. Hence, we came from what we'll be reporting about in our budget book, the National E-Skill Summit, whereby we say, what are the gaps? Because they do know that even the NDP is not incorporated into the curriculum. How do we then say we are building an army that will respond into that delivering of the 2030 targets? Therefore, that's why we work together to say, yes, this is what we are offering under the DHET, but these are the gaps. Then we work together with all the stakeholders that are there. Another member asked the question, who are the stakeholders of the COLEB? The stakeholders of the COLEB, first with the beneficiaries, the trainers in the classroom, the university itself, and any other body that the university thinks is important to participate in that there's NGOs and other people that are working with the college. Honorable Ndongeni makes a plea that if they were to be allowed to attend in the University of Western Cape, we have a college. There's certain courses that are being offered there. And yes, we do accommodate Honorable Sodezi, those that are employed, like I said. Most of these programs are online driven. Therefore, they don't require to be there full time. Others then, they determine if you attend over weekends or certain hours in a day, and then the rest of the work you can do. But of course, there will be a determination whereby they say you've got to be in class at least for 3 weeks for the first modules and all that. And then after that, you can go on and carry on with your work. So yes, we will be happy to have honorable members enrolling in the University of Western Cape College. That's just one of those. You will be seeing again in the budget vote, you will see the actual beneficiaries of the work that we're talking about. We are introducing measures to make sure that, as the minister has said, for example, the coding. We cannot be a department that is responsible to drive ICTs in South Africa, but we don't take interest in ensuring that we start them at that level. So we are introducing, we are partnering with different stakeholders to say, how do we make sure that we complement the work that is being done by the DBE, not because we want to take over on their mandate, but because we also have a responsibility that the NDP clearly identifies everybody be connected by 2030, but most importantly, be digitally literate. Therefore, we've got to make sure that we work with whoever that can help us achieve those commitments. Age limit on enrollment, we do not have an age limit. You can go. It doesn't matter if you're 50 or 60, as long as you meet those requirements. But like I said, that there's the university level. We start from N1, N3, and you have level 3 to say we can take you through. The minister has already spoken on the issue of the number of board meetings. The team is going to talk to the funding from DHC. They will talk to those. And are the courses accredited? Yes. Hence you see that we have SAQA, and like I said, we offer them in partnership with the university. Donations and the conditions. Of course, if we are to make sure that we reach a particular number of people that we have to train, we can't only rely on the funding that we have. There will be sectors who come and say, this is the specific requirement that we need, that you must train for us. And then in those cases, we're able to say, is guided by the National Treasury to say, these are the guidelines thereof, if you are going to fund that particular program. Like we can go to the National Skills Fund and say, we want to build an army here, help us in terms of enrolling out these particular skills. Okay, I will then hand over to the team to take the other question. Thank you, Shukran.
Good morning. Thanks, Chairperson, Minister DM, and honorable members. Just maybe to bring to attention Section 6-7 deals with the issue of the board, where it says that the members of the board contemplated in subsection 3A, B, C are appointed by the minister on the grounds of their knowledge and experience in the following areas. Now, what that section does, it lists the kind of areas that, in our view, should be represented in the board. So the number of board members, in addition to what the minister has indicated on the compliance side of things, we also look at what competencies are required to run an institution of this nature. Now, it may not be big in size when you look at the institution, but in terms of the kind of issues that we need to grapple with, you need all these competencies. So fair enough, a point can be made about the size of the institution per se. But as we look at it, we suggest here that we should include ICT academia, research, ICT innovation, ICT management, law, digital skills, and multimedia, because it goes on intellectual property and so forth. So that is the basis we use to arrive at the proposed number of board members.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm just
combating the large number of questions by the minister and the DM, but I'm just going to try and give some explanation on some of the questions. There was a question on short courses, whether these will be just standalone courses or there's a chance for gradual upskilling and so on. What informs this bill and the business case itself is the movement towards having these short courses building up to a qualification. So what is required there is that they are portable, you can take them away from this institution, go to any other one. Because they are part of the NQF framework, then you can still add onto those until you have a certain qualification or a certificate. The question on the size of the board, I think that has been covered. But indeed, you know, the board operates through subcommittees of the board where board members divide themselves to focus on certain key aspects of the business. Some of these subcommittees are mandatory in terms of the law, and we thought therefore that a minimum of six would put a board in a position to exercise its responsibilities in terms of those committees. There was also a question or an issue about procedures for decision making, whether executive members of the board should participate in decision making. We are informed here, we did not put a specific provision that deals with the distinction between executive and non-executive, but we are informed by the body of knowledge emerging through, for instance, the King reports on corporate governance. As part of the thinking there, it says essentially executive and non-executive members have almost the same responsibilities, they have equal standing in the board. But there are also arrangements whereby if the rest of the board wishes to discuss matters pertaining to the management of the organization, that then the board may meet in what they call a meeting in committee, where then executive members are not part of that meeting. That allows then the board to assess even the performance of executive management. I will request the professor to talk about the monitoring and evaluation. There was a question there how that will be performed. There was then a question on public comments. My big file here. We indeed issued the bill for public comments, and we received comments from these stakeholders that I'm going to list now. There were comments from NEMISA itself, the board, the CEO, one lecturer, the staff members, and also former students of NEMISA. They submitted 20 submissions, but which were pretty much the same across the 20. The two collabs commented as well, the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. And coincidentally, these are also the collabs we visited as part of the consultation. There was also comment from Dodzedna, and there were comments from the industry. We got comments from Backbox Animation, the National Association of Broadcasters, as well as the Institute of Information Technology Professionals. We then got comments even from internally in the department. Some staff members submitted comments. All of these comments were considered, and we truly made amendments or revisions to the bill where we could and where we thought it was advisable to do so. But I think, as I said, there is no comment that was totally left unattended. With respect to the impact, impact assessment, yes, the CS was performed by GPME, and we got an impact certificate for the business case. And we submitted the copy of the business case to the committee, but we will be happy to do so again. We've never changed it after we submitted. There was a process of refining the business case, but up to the point where we submitted it to this committee, I think it was late last year, there was no subsequent refinement. Funding from DHEC, we did not provide for any funding from DHEC in the bill itself, but there is an understanding which is informed by us realizing that we need to train millions, as the minister was indicating. So there's an understanding that we need to leverage some of the funding that is already available in the public sector of immediate as targets here. We're thinking of higher education training, particularly their skills development funding. We also are having discussions with the Department of Labor, looking at the UIF and other funds they have there. So we are indeed looking at leveraging from those sources of funding, but we did not make specific provisions for that in the bill. Collab in the Free State, maybe Prof, if you can comment on that as well. Good numbers. And also Prof, if you may comment on the Gauteng Collab versus Northern Cape Collab. There was a question on the number of meetings for the board. The rule of thumb again is a minimum of 4 meetings, but we do allow again for business to dictate the need for or no need for extra meetings. On top of the legislation governing each entity, we enter into what we call shareholder compact, depending on the classification of that entity in terms of the PFMA. If not the shareholder compact, then what we call the governance agreement. In there, we go into detail in specifying the process of exceeding the rule of thumb of the meetings and notifying the minister and motivating for such a meeting. Our legal people may comment on the use of the term may, you know, whether it truly empowers the minister to act. There was a question of whether the board can fire the CEO without ministerial approval. We have provided in the bill that that can only happen with the approval of the minister. Then the question on the cost of the bill, the minister has answered this question. But perhaps I need to just add, other than the cost in terms of implementation, there are other sort of what I may call immediate implications. As we have indicated, NEMISA or INESI will cease to perform education and training itself and will do so through the collabs, which then has an immediate implication on the training people who are within NEMISA. Those people have a choice to elect to stay within NEMISA and perform other program work, or choose to move to a collab dealing with issues relating to broadcasting. Then the function will transfer from the department, and the resources that were also remaining in the department will transfer to INES. So thank you very much.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, Honourable Members of the committee. May I just introduce one person who joined the organization. You at the previous meeting, you've met Mr. Pukubie, who is interim CEO, but beginning of the month, Mr. Ramawa joined us from the University of Venda, where he was teaching, so he brings a teaching expertise, but he has now been appointed as the CFO of the organization. Could I perhaps then, as chairperson, could I just start with a comment on the issue of the focus not on basic education? That was answered already by the Deputy Minister, but there's just a comment I would like to make on it. The people who are involved in doing those, the teaching and training interventions, the teachers at school, where does their capability come from? And one of our collabs has been specifically focusing on teacher training for the making getting the teachers to a level of digital literacy which is appropriate for their functioning as teachers and also for their ability to teach components of digital literacy at school level. And that is the Eastern Cape Collab at Walter Sisulu University. They've been focusing specifically on that and have been building some expertise, and as you know, the expertise built in one collab can now spill over into the other collabs. That's, I think that's just important. So it's not directly involving the learners at school, but the teachers and their capabilities. I want to get to the other questions that I was asked to respond to. A question was asked by Honourable McKenzie around the size of the board, but that the number of board members, it has been addressed. May I just add something? And that is specifically in connection with NAMESA currently and the future INESI. Since this organization literally covers the whole of the world within which the digital dimension has to play a role, that is fairly broad. On the one hand, you've got people in non-school learning situations. On the other hand, you've got people that who are involved in specifically in studying computer science and information science. So it's a broad area that actually needs to be covered by the expertise in the board. I'll come to that, Chairperson. The question about monitoring and evaluation, how it will be performed. Typically, at a broad level, the first thing to get expertise, get information on, is what is the level of digital literacy in certain sectors of society. What is it in general? What is it per province? What is it in rural versus urban populations or in specific organizations, say for example in the public service? These are studies that will have to be done. And there is very good international expertise of how such studies can be done. In fact, it is part of the planning of the programs within the MISA becoming INESI. Part of the programs is specifically about environmental scans, which will enable us to get that level of insight. At the moment, that kind of information is really not reliable information, is not available. There is something called the Barclays Digital Development Index, which also includes South Africa, I think 6 or 7 other countries. I've looked at that, but it works on people's self-evaluation. Yeah. That's not good enough. There's other good research from last year that shows that self-evaluation is not really a good measurement in terms of digital skills. That's now proven in this area. In other areas as well, but specifically in this area. So how will it be performed? At this stage, we can only say that it will be performed. How it will be performed by following best practice in terms of determining levels, monitoring the effect and the outcomes and the impact. That is a bit more difficult, as I related at a previous meeting, but we will simply have to develop a model that helps us to understand the impact of such activity. There are even 2 studies, I may just say, from the state, United States, on the impact of digital literacy, which I've actually only seen 2 days ago for the first time, brand new studies, in fact. A question was asked about the position of the Gauteng regarding the collabs, because we've got a collab at VUT, Vaal University of Technology, called Southern Gauteng and Northern Cape. That is indeed the area in which that collab is active. So it fulfills a role in the Northern Cape, and it has interventions and huge number of interventions in very small and remote places with graduation ceremonies, everything taking place there. The planning is that the VUT collab, which went through a first year of establishing that collab at TUT, Tshwane University of Technology, that collab will focus specifically on the creative industries. And that not doing only that, it will also have a role in the rest of Gauteng, but specifically with their thematic area being the creative industry. So they will focus a lot on what is multimedia, but also a broader range of issues relating to broadcasting, etc. The discussions with the Free State higher education entities to establish a collab, a discussion was undertaken last year, but it was only at a preliminary level, a level done by the CEO. Those discussions have to be followed up. The thematic area will typically be established in conjunction with that university, but taking into account the coverage of specialist areas already done by other areas. So those discussions must still take place. That is the one that is really not at the point where we can say it is established at this stage. Only very preliminary. I think I've addressed some of the issues that were, if I missed one, please make the attempt on that. Thank you.
With your permission, in order to ask for a legal fee to comment on just one legal fee.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, BG, maybe one or two issues. So the accountability matter of rogue boards, and which can apply to CEOs, so the bill, I think, does two things. On the one hand, it creates the enabling provisions to deal with, maybe that's not the right word, but to address matters of inefficient and rogue boards and CEOs. So there are those enabling removal provisions in Section 8 and 14. But similarly, the opposite side is that you have to always follow due and legal processes. So both instances, the enabling provisions are made subject to in the case of boards, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, and in the case of the executive board members, the CEO and so on, the Labor Relations Act. So that no unfairness takes place on the other side as well. So that any removal is done fairly and in accordance with the law. One or two other small questions that may have slipped through the matter of the independent panel. So that's dealt with in Section 6.5b. So it simply says that the minister must appoint an independent panel to handle the nomination recommendation process to the minister. So the current bill does not, in other words, deal specifically with that panel, except to state that it must be independent. Of course, it can be written in different ways. In terms of the alternative process, the Honourable Member said expand on that, but it can't be expanded on because the bill doesn't expand on it, deliberately so. So for practical reasons, you on the one hand, there's a proper process set out, but in the unlikely event that process fails, what do you do? So for practical reasons, you need to have a form of an alternative. And therefore, the bill simply talks about an alternative process may be followed. I mean, it's needless for me to now specify what that could be, because it could be advertised in other media. It could be the use of different recruitment measures. But the fact is, the bill at least says, as long as those are transparent alternative processes. the key question was asked, I unfortunately, it was a matter of May. I didn't hear the context the Honourable Member asked that in terms of a specific section where there's a may or a must. But just generally speaking, may gives a discretionary power. So there's nothing, there's no obligation. It's a minister, a functionary, a board has a discretion whether to perform whatever the law says or not to perform it, as opposed to the word must, which is similar to shall. So there is no room to move. It is an obligation usually that must be executed by the relevant functionary in the bill. Typically, there's a section somewhere or a clause at this stage that says the minister may extend the term of office of a member of a board for 6 months. So that's a discretion. It doesn't oblige the minister. The minister can exercise his mind and determine for whichever reason it's not necessary to extend the period to 6 months because he has a discretion, he may. If that same section said the minister must, then the minister wouldn't have had an option but to then perform whatever the bill says must be performed. So it's a careful analysis in each bill to determine what are the absolute musts that can't be negotiated out of, that must be performed, and what are things that you want to enable a functionary or administrator to exercise some discretion and do or not do a particular function depending on the circumstances. The other questions were on the how many board members. The Honourable Member said, where is that written? That's section 6.3. So it gives a, you have to read the section by looking at the different parts. In other words, the board is appointed by the minister as part of non-executive members and is constituted as follows. So that then tells you your board would have a chairperson, a deputy chairperson, then between 6 and 10, so you add that to your board members, which would be your non-executives, then your chief executive officer and your chief financial officer, your two executive directors. All of those together form the board and the number that the member was actually inquiring about. The last one was the difficult one of ensuring in section 4.1d, where INESI must work with institutions to ensure. So on the one hand, it's quite a wide obligation. I think the obligation lies in working and engaging and collaborating with various institutions. But the ensure maybe is a strong word because it's one of those non-negotiables in a sense. It's almost like the shell because you want to ensure that the relevant institutions actually respond to the demands and needs of digital skills and multimedia in the country. It's something that we can't afford not being addressed anymore, and therefore it's important that they work with them to ensure that it's responded to. Of course, it's not absolute because an institution can easily say, I have responded and I've done this by changing my curriculum a little bit here or there. So, but at the very least, you want to make sure that the institute works with these relevant institutions. That's all. Thank you, Jim.
Mama Killian and Mama Shin and Mama.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you for the replies and responses from everybody. The intention of the question about identifying the very serious digital gap that we are facing and the role of schools, etc., was actually based not understanding that INESI would train all of its children. It was meant to say, is that not where our digital gap commences? And it is on the basis of access to internet and participation in the digital society and the lack thereof. If we look at the household survey, I mean, it's clear
that the digital divide is still a reality. And in particular, if you look even at at households, access to internet at home, it is expanded a little bit with people having access to work as well, but you see, unwittingly, patterns are reinforced, because I mean the province with the most horrible access is the Northern Cape. And Northern Cape is one of our poorest provinces. I mean, same with the other poor provinces, you know, like Limpopo, etc. So what I'm just saying is, will Inyesi develop a sort of a standard which will be adjusted as the world is moving on what are the minimum skills that you should have? Because for as long as we don't have access to schools, to internet, to affordable internet, we don't have affordable access to data, and it's very often it's a cost issue. And we can have a very nice idea, and the concept of Inyesi is fantastic, but its impact will be sort of not as significant as we would want to see it because of the current realities that we are facing. How do we bridge that? I mean, this is where other role players are coming in, and in many, many respects are failing. You know, accessibility, USASA and their rollout, etc. Sustainability of the infrastructure that is being created. You know, Jay, you know what we are facing as far as that is concerned. So what I'm saying is, it sounds good. But the concern is that we are again creating an entity with a provincial presence, etc., but that is where it's going to stop. So, would you then help to develop some or other minimum requirement of students moving through the school system so that they can build on that chair when they go, when they leave school, and many of them leave it at grade 7? Others leave at grade 9. So, you know, just to get an indication of how do we really make an impact on creating skills that can bring the people who are currently left out of the digital economy, how to bring them on board. Thank you, Chief.
Let's put it this way, Chief. I agree with you that, you know, I mean, for you are struggling with this lot in terms of introducing them into the digital environment.
Why are you pointing it out?
I'm pointing at your age. Exactly what you are saying. Now, what Julie is saying is that to introduce them at their age into this space is harder. You have people with very soft minds that can take these things and go, and those people are found at the DBE level. Mm-hmm. Now, what has happened in the world? I mean, if we were to look at places like China, at what age do they introduce the digital knowledge? Do they go for out after school, or they actually go to the DBE community? I think that's what Julie is asking. And why are we not targeting that so that we're able to close the digital divide? In other words, find innovative ways, instead of targeting them there, go for them here, you'll have less problems up there. I think that's what Julie is saying. And I can't agree more with Julie. But, yeah, Julie, but I want you to take forward the argument you had made with the lawyer, our letter friend, your rogue issue at SABC. Because I could hear that they just brushing it nicely away because they have never seen it live. Your executive and your non-execs as to where the tire hits the tar. I think just elaborate on that matter, because I think it is something that legal crafting has not taken into account. But yeah, you are still on the floor because I interrupted you. Actually, I will talk to you later, sir. Julie?
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, yes. What I wanted to just say is we have, in fact, learned very valuable lessons in the process of the ad hoc committee. And there were two critical things. One is that a board, whenever they have run out of legislative mechanisms to do what they want to do, they all of a sudden, overnight, have some other transformation and become directors of a company, and then they rely on the Companies Act. And then they want to back up arguments and fight into the courts on the basis of the Companies Act, which is then giving them sort of additional powers, strangely, as I say. The other mechanism is that that you need to differentiate very clearly between the executive function and board function. And I think the president has made it very clear that one of the reasons why so many public entities failed was because boards were performing executive functions and they were not in fact doing what they are supposed to do, and that is strategic overview, accepting accountability for what goes wrong, but giving direction. And then they interfere, they call additional meetings, and mind you, you know, for every additional meeting they also can claim money, etc., etc., just as a matter of interest, and so on. So those sort of activities, unfortunately, would have to be very clearly regulated by law. We can't just accept King IV principles and think everybody will abide by it. I think we will have to introduce some of those mechanisms into our legislation to have a very clear understanding of everybody. If we want to create confidence in this entity and we want to depend on public funding, I mean by the public, by companies, etc., we will have to make sure that this entity is so accountable and that there can be very limited space for rogue activities, be it the executive, including the CFO, with all sorts of creative accounting, or be it the board, and you know, assuming sort of powers that they don't have. So I think that is just where I have issue, that I don't think. But, you know, when we deal with the detail, we will look at that. But from the questions that we posed was, have you considered all of that? And maybe we are just overly sensitive because both the chairperson and myself were part of the ad hoc committee and we understood exactly what went wrong at the SABC. Thank you.
Perhaps just to conclude what Julie was saying, if the law does not prescribe as to, I mean, I think the issue that we had, one of them, Chair, I mean, Julie, was that the chairperson has executive authority to take decisions and calling himself or herself a board. And he was using the Companies Act.
Yeah.
Because through the Companies Act, the chair has got superpowers. He takes decisions and the board can always come after to ratify. And but in that regard is when you have the executive, the executives and the board, and the chair, they sit as a board. And they're able to do it. And it's only when there was that intervention that question got. But indeed, like I said earlier on, this is our responsibility to enact this legislation So it is our responsibility to craft and tighten it in such a way that we achieve this thing that we think is required, that may have fallen into the cracks in the entities that we have been with. Madam Shin, Mama Sotesi, and Baba Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question that I forgot to ask earlier. When we talk about the funding of NSE, which is what Section 17, we talk about in B, the revenue, you know, the funds will come from revenue. Now, apart from milking the unemployment insurance fund or whatever else you have sort of statutory funds you can put your fingers into, which I presume is this what this is, can you explain whether you will get revenue from any other source apart from the government grant? If you could explain that, please. Then, just on my bit about the independence panel to evaluate board nominees, I just hope that we don't. I think we need to define who these people are on this panel, because you know, what's to stop the minister appointing his constituency football team, for example? And I know that being a ridiculous idea, but you know, let's be specific about who's going to be judging the nominees or the people who put their names forward. Then, if the legal advisor can just explain, apropos the discussion that's just happened, is that my understanding is that NSE is going to be a public entity. It's not going to be a state-owned company, so therefore the Companies Act doesn't apply, I assume. Which obviously was a perpetual problem in the SABC. They didn't know which acts actually governed it. So I want to know whether, you know, the problem of, you know, the chairman taking over and becoming the CEO is applicable to a public entity as it would have been to the SABC. Is there a difference here in board responsibilities? Thank you.
Is that all? Okay. When are they ending? Okay. All right.
Just sorry, but I just wanted to suggest that we just adjourn 5 minutes.
Okay.
That we go and record our presence. Because according to parliamentary records, if you don't record your presence, you are marked absent from a sitting of parliament. And committee records don't absolve you.
They don't trump the sitting of parliament.
Okay.
Okay. Can you quickly, let's just take the questions quickly, and then I'll give you the time to go and do what you need to choose. Baba, Mama,
and then
Baba.
Is it me?
Mackenzie, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think we are comfortable with the explanation regarding the flexible hours of attendance, because we have cases whereby people just register, attend once or twice, and drop out, and that's money involved. You know, because of the attitude of some employers. We know training of employees is obligatory, legislated, but we know they are very often defiant. We're happy about the flexible hours. And on this one, Minister, about the number of boards, you say the maximum is 2, but it is not explicit in terms of the position you hold. I'm just thinking that if you are a CEO in one board and you're also a member of another board, taking into account your responsibilities as a CEO, will you really manage to run the 2 boards? And on the management of meetings, I don't think your explanation is really satisfactory. You know, when we have a maximum of 4 and you end up with 5 or 6, it's understandable. But I think you remember in one of the entities, we had members sitting for 10 or 15, you know, meetings. And I think that one is not acceptable. That's why I was asking about the valid reasons that will really compel people to sit for so many, you know, times, taking into consideration that the maximum is 4, but like I say, 5 or 6 will be understandable. Thank you.
Robert Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps the law advisor can assist. I'm not a lawyer. My daughter is. As far as I understand, the Companies Act, now that it's been raised, I'm quite happy with the provisions relating to directors in this bill, given that the Companies Act applies equally to directors of state-owned companies or public companies and private companies as well. It doesn't draw a distinction between the two types of directors. Am I correct there? And as far as I understand, and certainly in terms of sections 70, again, I'm open to correction, relating fiduciary duties of directors, both public and private, it draws no distinction. In fact, it's quite specific about that. All that I think has been missing to date, the Companies Act has teeth. It's just the political will to actually prosecute delinquent directors under that legislation. And perhaps some of those former directors of the post office minister we could target and perhaps set an example as to how directors should exercise their duties. So if you could answer that, Lord Vice, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I don't think that surely there's anything to be answered in what we have said. There are more comments and views, and finally, it is our responsibility to craft the bill so that it does what we want it to do. Indeed, they will be here as we walk the journey towards the enactment of the bill, and we can always raise issues and clarify them so that we make that law. I wanted to grant members to go and do what they want to do and come back in 10 minutes so that we deal with our way forward in terms of the bill. So the minister and the DM... Okay.
Now, on the issue I'm talking about today of the board and the SADSA experience, I think they're good ones. But this board will be slightly different from the SADC because of the accountability faced to the minister, the contract with the minister, the MOU, and that the governance agreement. I think that's what will really help us, but not that we are trying to say those things don't matter. I don't want to open the can that SAP board is not really functioning like a board, it's a forum of political party representatives which report to Parliament. So that's a slide, but I'm just saying I think we should, the main thing is to clarify the role of the minister, the role of the executive members of the board, and the role of the non-executive members of the board. If you can clarify those, I think the governance will be quite simple. Thank you very much.
So we'll be back in the next 10 minutes. But indeed, I think all of you are free to vamush. We will deal with our in-house arrangements towards the enactment. Okay.
You are coming back to me.
No.
Thank you.
We are right in the middle of the
head.